rate them that highly, then they'll say yeah, won't they?
Or we'll give you the mystery box.
Yeah.
Reading showed plenty of pride at Derby, but didn't end up with any points as a 3-2 defeat condemns us to our first three-game losing streak under the management of Yap Stan. We'll ask whether this is again just a little bit of a blip or if there is something quite worrying going on at Reading Football Club. Lots to get to in this show. It is the Tyler Sten Podcast, episode number 115. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersten.com. I'd like to be joined this week by Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Just a singleton this week, just that Mr. West, I'm afraid.
Yeah, oh, well, there you go. just the two of us.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Obviously, last week you had a few more in.
We did.
I enjoyed last week's show. I said that as I was talking to you off air.
Thank you.
Really good it was.
Does that mean you've not enjoyed the other ones, or...?
I'll be honest, I don't always listen to them.
Oh, there you go.
But no, I did.
But do you download? That's all we care about.
I do download. Always
well,
download.
There you go. Yep. That's what matters. It still
always
counts.
Always download.
There you go. Right, I said lots to get to, including that defeat up at Pride Park. Plus, we've got your questions, a couple of bits in the mailbag, including rumours of a new striker. So let's get right into it with the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Derby County 3, Reading 2 at Pride Park on Saturday. Westy, as mentioned, that is the first time we've lost three straight games under Yap Stan. Two of those coming in the league. The first time we've had back-to-back defeats since right at the start of the season when we lost at Wolves and Newcastle. But that Newcastle game, it's good that that comes into this conversation because I thought that this performance at Derby reminded me a lot about this, where Reading took on a very strong team at home who had a lot of power behind them and they gave them a real good go. And like that game at St James's Park, I thought Reading could have come away with something from this one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought I was going to come on today and be a bit downbeat about the fact they have lost three games on the trot. But if you look at it, the more worrying thing than anything is the fact that they're losing games from self in many ways. I mean, the second goal probably killed Reading on Saturday and it was for their own doing again. A bit like the QPR game the week before. I often say Championship games are always very level. At the start of the season, we was coming out of them games and winning. And at the moment, it just seems the run of play sort of going against us. But again, the worrying thing is it's our own, from our own downfall, overplaying it at the back.
Yeah, I mean, that's bad. Obviously, you don't want to be giving away stupid goals. But the good thing is that is something that on paper, at least, you should be able to cut out quite easily.
It'll come with them learning how to play the system properly. I mean, I was talking at work today and I was saying, the thing is, it's the project, for want of a better word, is happening now and we're doing well. We've started off really well.
Yeah.
But what we forget as football fans is this is completely alien to what we've been doing over the last 200 years. You know what I mean? It's just not happened till now, this level of playing at the back and keeping the ball. And the fact that we've gone so well with it so far, I think we overestimating how good they're doing. But it's that little odd mistake. If we can cut that out, I mean, next year you'd think that'd be a flying sign.
Yeah, and you look at the people that have been committing these mistakes. These have been people that have been pretty reliable. I mean, we talk about Ali Alhabsi errors. We talk about Liam Moore, who was a culprit on Saturday, unfortunately. A double error, really. He comes, he loses the ball with a silly pass and he comes charging out, leaving a big gap. But that's not what Liam Moore does week in, week out.
No, I think, again, it was one of those things to try and rectify your own mistake. He sort of got a bit hot in the head and tried to make a tackle he was never going to make. But yeah, it's unfortunate they've got beat. And I thought from the balance of play, they was unlucky to come away with a defeat. I mean, if it ended up 3-0, I think we'd have said fair enough. But again, the upside to it is I thought we went to Derby, a side that are going to be up there near the end of the season. And we looked better than them for long periods of the game. Unfortunately, we've come away with a defeat.
Yeah, you look at it going in our prediction league. 4 out of 5 of us predicted a defeat. Handbags went for a cheeky win. But you spoke to most fans before this. I mean, the bookmakers had Reading beyond nearly 4-1 to win this game, which is massive odds for a team that, you know, what were we, fourth in the league going into this one? So it was a game that was always a bit of a bonus, really, and if we got the result. And the heartening thing was we could and should have got the result from that. It just didn't go our way. Going back to the start of the game, we got to see a debut for Thiago Alori, slotted into a back three alongside the returning McShane, back from wrist surgery, and he played alongside Liam Moore, who we've mentioned. Thiago, Westy, no, you weren't there to see the game, but from all reports, I mean, you look at the stats from that game, he said 78 passes, which was the joint most in the team, 91 touches as well, which was the second most in the team. He looks, just on that basis, you can tell exactly why Stam's bought him.
Yeah, he's buying players to fit a system, and that's what you've got to do. Once you put a system in place, you've got to put players in that can play that system, and that's exactly what he's doing. And I thought, actually, when I looked at the side on Saturday, that it looked like a strong, balanced side. It looked like the back three centre-backs looked strong for that league. I mean, it looks ridiculous now they conceded three goals, but, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? They look like three strong centre-backs for the Championship. And, I mean, Kelly, I thought Kelly was excellent again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty much made that team tick. I mean, he created all our best chances.
Cracking assist. What a run.
So I'm saying he's got drive. And I was saying last time I was here that is a new signing because no one expected Kelly to make an impact in that side. Yes, he will make the odd mistake because he's young and learning and the pace of the game he's probably not as used to as he will be near the end of the season. But he has been a massive signing for, signing for Reading, even though he's not a signing. And Thiago, he comes with a big billing. I mean, we paid a lot of money for him. He's been sold for a lot of money. And in the age he is, I think it is a brilliant signing from Reading. It's the sort of thing they should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a couple of moments where it looked like he was on a bit of a different wavelength, a couple of passes going straight. But that's what you get when you're new to a team, you've only been charged.
Touch of the Marek Matejowski.
Maybe a little bit. But when you've only been training with your teammates for a few days, that sort of thing can happen. But you mentioned Kelly. I mean, the thought of what Kelly and Swift can do together, if they're allowed to sort of grow. It's been a while since we've had a really good little partnership. They're both young, hungry, on the way up. And if Reading can just keep those two together.
Yeah, it's a strong base and your midfield needs to be strong and your centre-backs, obviously. And the core of your team through the middle needs to be strong. And I think Reading have got that.
Yeah, we talked about it, I remember, last season and the start of the season, about building a spine. And Reading, you can see that spine is slowly being strengthened. They've got good young defenders in Moore and hopefully Ilori. Obviously, it's early days. Don't want to give him too much praise yet. Swift and Kelly in the middle as well. It's just sort of, I don't know, Habsy obviously does a decent job in the goal as well. It's just up front, maybe. Kermigan doing okay, but I think they still need something there to worry teams.
Yeah, but ironically, we're scoring goals.
Yeah.
We're just conceding too many, and that's what's costing them games. And again, it's come from their own errors, unfortunately.
Well, to go to Pride Park, and Reading won the possession battle, 60% of the ball, which against the Steve McLaren team at home is what you don't see very often at all. And this time, unlike the QPR game, they turned it into opportunities. They outshot Derby, got that opening goal. Unfortunately, just get pegged back just before half-time, and it's a real momentum shifter because you could hear the Derby fans getting on the team's back. When McLaren came down from his seat high up in the stand to the touchline, that's how worried he was.
Well, his comments after the game told you we need to know, because he said the first 25 minutes I thought it was going to be a real bad day at the office, and it should have been, unfortunately.
Yeah, Reading just lacking, and maybe this is where the striker thing comes in, just couldn't finish off a couple of opportunities. Just need that killer player. You know, some teams have got that. Leeds have got Chris Wood. Newcastle have got Dwight Gayle. Reading maybe just need that extra bit of predatorial instinct up front to create something out of nothing, like a Nicky Forster used to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel Swift as well. I still don't think Swift is playing at 100%.
No.
I thought he faded quite badly at the end of the game, last 10, 15 minutes before he got taken off. He was struggling, and obviously they got substituted. So I think there's more to come from Swift, and we know what a good player he is. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, again, this was a Derby team that hadn't conceded a goal at Pride Park in 8 games.
Yeah, and we carved them open and scored goals. Well, obviously we scored right at the end, but we could have had three. And
to score two?
Yeah, to score two, but could have had three easily. It just goes to show what the level Reading were playing at. It's just unfortunate.
Yes, Darren Bent grabs the equaliser, and then it's in the second half. Reading settle back down after weathering a real storm to the end of the first 45. Come out the second half, looks to be settling down. And then, as mentioned, Liam Moore unfortunately plays a pass to nowhere in the middle. Ball gets intercepted. Moore charges out to try and win the ball back. Gets threaded through and finished off. Third goal comes very quickly. But credit to this Reading side, because they didn't fold like they did. Maybe you could say at places like Brentford. They came back into this. And the Yak Westie, at the site where his namesake, Yakubu,
glorious FA Cup goal.
Got his glorious FA Cup goal. Yak version 2. Pops up with a really good header.
Good header as well. It looked a powerful header, didn't it?
Was it a world-class header, though?
It was definitely not a world-class header, but it was a good finish. Like I say, he's a young man, another young man that's got a lot of promise. And again, he's another person that should be trying to force his way into the team at the moment.
And goals do massive amount of confidence for strikers. I mean, he was a player that's come over to England, he's not played really any professional football. Played, I think, one game for PSG. So to get that first goal and prove you can do it. The thing with the Yaku Mate, and I was talking to Wim Senior earlier, he reminds me a little bit of that Shane Long, when Shane Long very first came to Reading. Do you remember?
Yeah, 2005, very raw, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he got that goal at Derby. On New Year's Eve to keep the unbeaten record. And you just wonder if how much that will do for his game. We've got a question in the mailbag, so I won't talk too much about him now, but fantastic to see him get that first goal for the club. Yapstam's comments on the game. He said, if you give away two easy goals, it's not easy to win games. It's all about scoring one goal more than the opposition, and you don't want to lose games. Nobody is happy losing games. A lot of people will start talking about the couple of games we lost, but that's football. We won a lot of games in the first half of the season, and sometimes you lose a couple as well. Today we didn't succeed, didn't get what we deserved, but we looked to Tuesday with the confidence that we played well. We're mentally strong, and now we need to show that mentality to start winning games. The bit that interests me, Westy, from his comments, and I listened to his post-match on BBC Radio Berkshire, was he said that he doesn't set his teams up to keep clean sheets and then get a goal to win a game. He sets his team up to score goals, then they worry about keeping them out. Some people will be sitting there saying, well, isn't that the same thing? But I think there's a big difference there. It shows that he's proactive and he wants his team on the front foot.
There's a difference, I think. You're right there, because you can send a team out not to concede goals, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're sending them out to win the match. It means you're sitting there and hoping you can nick a goal. And a lot of managers do that, especially teams, sort of lower teams playing top sides. They sit 11 men behind the ball and hope they get one breakaway goal. Whereas what he's saying is, I'm setting up a team to go and win. And in the meantime, hopefully we can keep a clean sheet, but we're going to go and win the match.
Is that naive from a manager who's already got his team up into the top six and has the chance to really cement that? Should he be being a bit more pragmatic, or is it right that he's sticking to his philosophies and he wants to send his team out to win?
I think it's right he's sticking to his philosophies, because we'll see at the end of the season whether it is naive or not. I think you can go back years to when Kevin Keegan was in charge of Newcastle, and he was just playing gung-ho football, and even when there was 10 points clear, he's still doing it and ended up losing. And looking back, you say that it was naive, but if it would have worked, he'd look like a genius. So I think you just can judge it at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, we talked a lot about this last week. I tend to agree with you, but I do worry, given the overall situation of the football club and the whole uncertainty about the future, of how long-term damaging if we chucked away a playoff place it might be, because you do look at the situation off the field and you do think that if this takeover doesn't go through, are we going to get this close again? But I mean, yeah, it's hypotheticals.
It's hypothetical, and I thought, like I said, they've done enough to win the match. Unfortunately, they didn't, and I think we've been punished the last two games for making mistakes, and they've cost us, whereas at the start of the season we were getting away with them to a certain extent.
Yeah, and we talked at the very start of the season about Derby's strength. You looked at that squad they had on Saturday and the amount of the players they could bring off the bench, they weren't even in the squad. No.
But saying that though, looking at 11 to 11, I was confident that Reading looked like they had more to give.
Reading were a better, I think Reading are a much better team.
Do you know what I'm saying? When you've got Pearce and Baird at the front, I thought, well, yeah, all right, they're all right, but they're not well beaters, are they, by any stretch of the imagination? There's nothing in that team that frightened me. I mean, Bent, every time I watch Bent, I think he seems to get away with not doing an awful lot, but he knows where the goal is, doesn't he? Even if it hits him on the arm and goes in, he gets goals. The only one you really have to worry about is Ince, and obviously he scored as well. So I thought 11 against 11, I was confident that Reading had enough to go there and beat them. And we've got a good record at Derby in general.
I still say, though, if only Reading had one or two of those forward options, they've got that football club.
Well, if they had Ince, I think we had Ince and they didn't, then it might have been a different story.
Oh, it'd be massive. Yeah. If Reading had Ince, I think you'd be talking about a team pushing for the top two.
Yeah.
I still think it's that final third where we are really lagging behind our Championship rivals, and we're doing our very best, like you said at the start, to make up for that, because goals are coming from everywhere.
Yeah,
but if you had that killer striker, like when they got Jason Roberts, and we said it over and over again, have that player, it can make such a difference. But the transfer window's open for another 10 days or so, and that striker might be on his way in. We'll tell you who that is and tell you about a defender who's made a low move out to League One. That's coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay then, News Bites. We have made one signing already. We've mentioned his name several times. Thiago Alori finally arrived in Berkshire this week. Well, last week as we record this. He joined on a till the summer of 2020. And the fee is, again, believed to be somewhere between £2 and £3.5 million. A lot of it's done on add-ons and percentages and incentives and all that jazz. So the old undisclosed fee. Personally, USD, I don't understand why every deal isn't listed as what it cost.
I think you notice in general that most of Reading's are undisclosed.
It's just across football now. Yeah. Unless it's like a big, big, big one where they're happy to we've broken our transfer
record.
This is
how much we've spent, yeah. No, again, it doesn't really matter actually. He costs. It just matters if he performs when he's on the pitch. But they paid a lot of money for him. Like I say, he's got a big billing. He's gone for £7 million before now and he's still only 23, so I think it's a great signing for Reading.
I think it's a bit of a broader point, but I think one of the things I like most about Reading's transfer policy this season and under Brian Tevreden in general is everyone they've signed has either been so low cost that it's not going to cost them a lot if they flop, or they've signed players that are at that age and at that level where they'll be able to at the least get their money back.
Oh, there's definitely sell-on value for all the players they've bought just because, like you said, their ages, and they've got them cheap in general. I mean, obviously not this one, but in before, Evans, players like that have come in, they've got them as cheap as chips. And you can't imagine if you sold Evans now, you wouldn't get more than what Reading paid for him.
I think it was about 400 grand.
That's what I'm saying. You're probably looking at 750. You know what I mean? You'd make a profit on him now if you sold him. So he can only get better, I think, them sort of players.
Oh, absolutely. It's not the Danny Guthries where they come in and they're on big contracts and you can't shift them.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And it's a great policy to have. And I think the only worry for most fans, and I'd like to see homegrown players come through, is the fact that they might not. But Kelly's proven that if you're good enough, then you'll get your opportunity. So... great. I think it's great.
Yeah, and Tanai Watson and other players have been around. Dom Samuel as well have been around the club. One player who has been exposed to a lot of first-team football from the academy is Jake Cooper. He has left the club. He's joined Millwall on loan for the rest of the season. Went straight into their side at the weekend. Westie played in their draw at Bradford. Neil Harris, their manager, full of praise for him as well.
I think he hit the crossbar as well with a header.
Yeah.
I see this move for Millwall and I thought, what a great player to sign in that division. I think that will help Millwall have half a chance to get into the playoffs. In fact, when I looked at it, it changed my bet for the weekend. I thought I was going to do Bradford to win at home, and I see Cooper sign for Millwall, and I thought, no. I think he'd score goals for him. I think he'd be brilliant in that division. I like Jake Cooper. It's just he just doesn't fit into the system ready
to
play.
It's a lot like the move that saw Sean Morrison go to Huddersfield, and what wonders that did for him.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen Jake Cooper have some really good games for Reading. And I know we've also seen him make a few mistakes, but then he's still a young defender who looks like a man, but he's still really a boy, isn't he, in footballing terms. And I think Millwall signing him, I think it'd be great for Jake Cooper. And I also think that it'd be excellent in that division.
Playing 20, 25 games to now to the end of the season would just be a fantastic bit for his development.
I mean, he's a goal threat as well, isn't he? Not just a defensive threat, a great defender or good defender. He's a goal threat and he will score goals for Millwall. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 5-6 goals for the end of the season.
Are you worried about the cover, though, that's left at this football club? Because with Cooper going out, I know Allori's come in, but we saw the last time Reading had injuries, you had to see Joe Vandenberg in there. Have they got enough cover or do they still need another body?
Again, if Jake Cooper's not here, I'd say they probably haven't got enough cover. But when he has been here, he's been reluctant to play him. So I don't think he features in Yap's plans at all. So if that's the way he's going to go, then, like I said, Laurie and players like that are the sort of players they're going to sign.
Yeah, it's the same with Tariq Fosu as well, who's extended his stay up at Colchester to the end of the season. Although that one's weird for me because he's not getting in the Colchester. He wasn't playing at the weekend either.
No, and he's one that I thought was going to push on this year. I really thought, looking at him, he was going to be a good player for Reading, but it doesn't look like he's going to make it.
Yeah. A couple of other players who've left on loan, and these two might sound a bit surprising. Harry Cardwell and Billy Collins have both gone to Brighton under-23s. On loan. Cardwell, Collins is a goalkeeper, not really, you know, he's behind a lot of good young keepers in the academy coming through, your likes of Moore and Southwood, so that's not surprising. Reading's former academy goalkeeping coach, Shannon Ruth, moved to Brighton, I think at the end of last season, might have been the season before. So he's linked up their relationship, picking up that relationship once again. But Cardwell was a little bit surprising, Wester. I don't know how closely you'd followed the under-21s, under-23s. But this was young Scottish striker who Reading bought from Hull. I think they paid about 70, 80 grand for him.
Yeah.
Big things were expected, but to let him go, I think it's a little bit weird.
It is a bit strange. And they went out on a limb to get him in the first place. And it's not often you buy young players from other sides, is it, and give them an opportunity like that. Obviously he's not made the grade. Like I said before a million times, that sometimes young players haven't got the right attitude. And maybe that might have something to do with it. I don't know that for sure. I'm not saying that because I know it, but sometimes I think players have got big billions and they don't really live up to them.
Yeah, it seems to have fallen behind the likes of Novakovic and Sam Smith in the pecking order for the youngsters. And we've mentioned before, the academy just not seemingly able to turn coal into diamonds.
No, we struggle to get a striker out of the academy, don't we?
Yeah.
We've said this before.
Just not quite getting them to that championship standard. But you never know. It said there's plenty of talent in the academy at the moment, so hopefully one of them comes through. But if we can't grow them ourselves, we'll import them. And this case, the import might come from Grimsby. Omar Boggle, Westie.
He's got a great name, straight away.
Yeah, he is. 19 goals for Grimsby so far this season in League 2. The fees, they've reportedly rejected a 500 grand bid from Rotherham. Sources around Grimsby suggesting they want up to 2 million for him. He's certainly got the goals and he's come from non-league and done really well since he's joined Grimsby. But would you be comfortable paying anywhere near that money for an unproven talent?
No, not who's scoring goals in League 2. I think we have Matthew Mansay not so long ago, who was scoring lots of goals for Hereford in that division. And when he came to the Championship, he was nowhere near good enough to be a regular starter or a regular scorer. I mean, if you're paying 500, 600 grand, then I think it's worth a punt. If you're paying 2 million, then you want him to be scoring goals for you straight away, don't you?
Say that, but you look at the likes of Jamie Vardy.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm just saying if you're paying 2 million, it's a gamble. If you're paying 600,000, it's worth a punt.
Yeah, I would be much more comfortable, you know, if they've rejected 500 and they're asking for 2 million. I think if they end up paying even, I think, a million with, you know, up to another million in add-ons, I think is a deal I'm much more comfortable with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at least that way, if he proves it, then great. But if he doesn't, then you haven't lost too much. I think if he's scoring 20 goals for Grimsby, he's obviously got something about him, but it's a massive step up from League Two to the Championship.
Yeah, 24 years of age as well, so he's got time on his side.
Yeah, late developer, late bloomer. It happens, like you say, Vardy done something similar. It could be good, but like I say, for 2 million... Mm.
Yeah, one to keep an eye on anyway. I said we got, what, eight, nine days left of the transfer window, so...
All happens last minute, doesn't it, as usual?
It does indeed, it does indeed. So one to keep an eye on. In the meantime, that wraps up News Bites. We shall move in to the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
So just before we get into the mailbag, just wanted to say a massive thank you to everyone who has joined up to our Patreon crowdfunding campaign. It's kind of like The Tarlhurst End's tip jar. If you like what we do here on the podcast and on the website and you think, do you know what, those guys have given up their time and they put out some good content and they should be rewarded for that. Stick a couple of quid in, whether it's a one-off donation or you want to give every month. As mentioned, even when it's just, I think the lowest tier is like $2 or a dollar. But you have no idea the sort of the good vibes and stuff that spreads and what it goes towards, both in terms of the podcast and things for the site itself. You can head over to patreon.com/thetarlhurstend. That's Patreon, patreon.com/thetarlhurstend for more info on that. And I said it is a massive help, and big, big thank you to everyone who has given their support so far. You are in the elite circle if you do that, and forever a friend of the show. So thank you very much for that. But as I said, we appreciate that not everyone has the money to give. So those of you who just listen and send in your feedback every week are just as much friends of the show. And those of you who have sent in feedback to @thetarlhurstend on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is the email address, and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. We thank each and every one of you, starting with Matt Everson, who goes with a very big question: has the bubble now burst and will we make the playoffs? Fulham is a must not lose game.
No, I don't think the bubble's burst at all. Like I said, I think if we can cut out our own stupid errors, we'll get back to winning ways quite quickly. The only thing that concerns me about Fulham is they seem to have the beating of us over the last couple of seasons. You just hope that Reading can get some out of this game, because it was unfortunate, really, because it really, both these two games were 6 points for Reading, because if we could have won both these matches, it'd have put them a lot further away from us and they start running out of games eventually. But yeah, I think we need to get something out of the Fulham game, but I don't think the bubble's
their right
burst.
Winger caused us all sorts of problems at Craven Cottage, and we didn't mention it in the recap, but Jordan Obita sending off late on for a second booking, big blow.
I think in that system, yes, because I don't think you can put Blackett as a wing back. I'm not overly convinced him as a left back. So yeah, without I don't think Bieran's played this weekend, did he? I don't know if he was injured. I'm sure he probably was. If you're going to play this system, it's a problem not having a beater there, I think.
Yeah, Luke Burton asked, in no particular order, who do you think will finish in the playoffs?
I don't think it would change too much from what it is now. There's always some sort of surprise element. Derby might sneak in there. I don't see there being too much change.
I would say Leeds. I think Derby are going to do it. I just think they've got such an amount of talent.
I mean, Huddersfield seem to get results every week out of nowhere. You can't see them dropping out at the moment.
But will Sheffield Wednesday miss out? This is the thing.
Yeah, I think they will.
You think Sheffield Wednesday will miss out?
I think they will.
Apparently for Jordan Rhodes, if they get Jordan Rhodes. This is the thing. A couple of signs in January really changes the dynamic. But for nailed on, I would say Derby and Leeds. The other two, let's go for Reading. And I don't know who the other one. Were you saying Huddersfield?
I think Huddersfield, yeah. I think everyone thought they was going to fall away and they haven't fell away. So that says to me that they're good enough to be in there. And I watched Leeds the other night and I thought they were excellent. Enjoyed watching
any of those teams you're running play them. Obviously, if you play one of the best teams in the division, but...
There are no easy games.
No, exactly. That is very tough. Alex West asked a question to you, Alan West.
No relative.
No. With Stam Keane, that you know of. With Stam Keane to make more signings, our squad is getting quite full. Will there still be chances for youth next season?
We just discussed it earlier. Yes, I think if anything, it brings the level you have to be at to a higher level. And I think that can only be good for the squad in the long run. Kelly, like I say, he's first choice at the moment. You've still got players like Abita that are still playing, that come out of the academy. I think if you're good enough, you'll get your chance.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
A lot's going to depend as well on the financial situation of the football club. If there is no takeover and money becomes tight, you have to see more senior players moved on, less senior players brought in, and it opens up those chances. But if we get a big takeover from the Chinese consortium, who knows? So lots of ifs and buts at the moment. Sam Nash, when did we sell or lose Harry Cardwell to Brighton? Thought it was pretty promising. Well, we've covered that, unfortunately. Said he moved over the weekend. Stephen Bowler, seems clear we're too open if Liam Kelly and John Swift both start. Does Yapstam enforce one forward at a time rule or sacrifice one for Joe Vandenberg to hold?
Again, I think we've discussed it over and over. If Reading wouldn't have made that mistake for second goal, they might well have gone on to win that game anyhow. We wouldn't have this discussion. I think sometimes I've said this season that maybe in midfield they're a little bit light in tacklers, but with Danny Williams in there, I think he can do the job. He can hold, he can go forward. I think he's sort of all-round midfielder, whereas the other two are pretty on the ball, and Swift looks like he can score goals, but Kelly looks like he's got a bit of drive. And I think other than that, there's not that many tacklers around nowadays, yeah, is there, in midfield?
I don't know whether you don't sacrifice Williams for an out-and-out holding man like Vandenberg or George Evans. And Elm Park Royals has gone for the same question. He says, I get why Yapstam wants Liam Kelly and John Swift in 11, but leaves us too open. Is George Evans or Joe Vandenberg the answer, or do we need another defensive midfielder?
Yeah, but even Evans, I wouldn't say he was like although he can play holding midfielder, but he's not a player that you can see winning a lot of footballs.
So would you say they ideally need to go out and grab someone?
I think ideally, if it can't happen because he's injured, I think Quinn would be a great player to sit and hold because he will get around the pitch and make the odd tackle here and there and play it simple. I think probably he's the best bet, although he's not obviously not fit.
Yeah, and he wasn't massively favoured when he was.
No, he wasn't. But I like Quinn as a player. He gives you all he gets. He gives you all he's got, and I think he would probably suit that role better because we've seen Vandenberg, and I think he's a bit ploddy sometimes against anyone decent.
I would like to see them go out and grab someone, although in the circumstances of the three at the moment, I would probably pick George Evans. I don't think Danny Williams is doing enough to really say he's irreplaceable.
No, he isn't. You're right there. And it's Ledgerwood got a club yet. I know he's been out of football for about 10 years. But
he has, alas, he has tried. But if we could get a DeLorean and go back and fish him out from 5 years
ago. If we could get someone who could just nick a ball and play it simple, then great. But
Tish Boller back on loan, maybe.
Again, I don't think so. But yeah, I just don't think there's that sort of player about anymore.
No. And Chris Squire asks, what does Yakimete have to do to get more game time? We need more goals. He looks like scoring whenever he plays.
Yeah, but he only plays for little 10-minute, 15 spells, doesn't he?
The biggest problem for me is where does he play? Because if he has to play, who drops out of that team?
Yeah. Again, yeah.
You do something wacky like put Gareth McCleary in at fullback.
This is what I'm saying. It'd be McCleary that would probably have to drop out for him to play.
He's our top scorer.
And that's not going to happen. So, yeah. Again, if he keeps scoring off the bench, he'll get his opportunity. But he's only getting 10, 15 minutes stints, isn't he?
He's very much one for next season, I think. And hopefully, the more confidence he gets, the more impact he can make changing games. But I think for now, unless they go back to playing three up front and you can play him instead of maybe Beerens for now. I think him coming on and getting time is the best thing for him. Jack Killick says, a lot of fans getting upset over social media over the loss to Derby, but would anyone have predicted a draw or even a win for the game? Many fans have said we should change our style of play away from home. However, even if we did, I would still have expected us to lose. They hadn't conceded in 8 home games. We put 2 past them. Quick discussion point. Would you rather lose 1-0 to Derby and sit back most of the game or lose 3-2 like we did and put in a good performance? Because let's be realistic with their squad and their recent run of results, a draw or win was never likely.
I would say it was never likely. I think we could have quite easily gone there and got some out of it. But it's just one of those things on the day. I didn't think they need to change anything in particular. It didn't run from...
In answer to the question, I'm much more entertained losing like that. And it was an enjoyable game of football.
Yeah, you've got to go out to win football matches. I hate seeing managers sit in and just try and...
Warnock.
Nick, it just kills football. Just go for the win.
Yeah. Tom, games like Derby, QPR and Fulham will be games we will look back on and regret massively. It's very frustrating. The negative of underachieving for so long has left some fans settling for the progress we have made and not to want more. The squad is better than the mediocre attitude some fans have. We should be a third and challenging for the top two. It's silly lapses in concentration and individual mistakes which have cost us a lot of points. Yap's passing football doesn't work 100% of the time, but he must understand that and adapt accordingly. We're simply left too exposed at times. These are very frustrating times at the club. I'm concerned for certain areas with it. I understand what Tom said. I think that comes back to the whole, should Yap be a bit more pragmatic to get results? But, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that we should just be thinking, well, we're doing well, we're overachieving and we still got a chance, or should we be like, oh, that's more points dropped?
Yeah. It's a bit of both, isn't it, really? Yeah. I think it is more points dropped, and stupidly. But It's that style of football that's got us to where we are at the moment. So let's not push
it back. And you can say that, games like this will be games we look back on regret. But you can look at games like Ipswich getting a last-minute penalty.
Yeah, we've had...
Sheffield Wednesday game and Huddersfield getting a mountain. You can look at lots of games this season where you go, do you know what, we've probably nicked one here.
Yeah,
and on the balance, I think Reading have got what they've deserved.
Yeah, in general they have. And like I said, it's that style that's got us where we are at the moment. So let's not push the panic button too soon.
No, but at the same time, I do agree. I mean, we should be at this point looking forward. We shouldn't be going, oh, well, we were rubbish last season. It should be like, we're in a great position this season. Let's kick on. But I'm sure Stan is saying that in the dressing room. I'm sure. I know he's coming out in public and saying, you know, look at where we've come from. But in the dressing room, it'd be like, we've got a great chance here, lads.
There is no doubt in my mind that Reading will go on a run of 3 or 4 games and win them sooner rather than later. I'm not worried in the slightest. It's just, again, cut out your stupid mistakes.
Yep, and fingers crossed that starts this week. We will preview the 2 games with Fulham and Cardiff right after this.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
So, Westy, I doubt it escaped your attention this morning, but there was a little bit of fog around. A
little bit.
Which means that Fulham must be on their way to Medeski Stadium. In all seriousness, the rescheduled game that was lost, obviously, due to the fog over Christmas, there is actually heavy fog scheduled for tomorrow night as well. So, one to keep an eye on.
I don't think you'll remember this, but back in Elm Park days, I think it was Bury come down to Reading and it absolutely hammered
down. I was there.
Was you there?
We were 2-0 down, weren't we?
2-0 down. And Mickey Gooden, I'm sure it was Mickey Gooden and Quinny, kept kicking the ball into the puddles and complaining to the referee. And it eventually called the game off. And then the next time, when we had the replay, the Bury player come out with a pitchfork and stuck it in the middle of the pitch just to make sure there wasn't enough water on it. So, yeah, so it reminds me of that to a certain extent.
Did well that season. I think we got to the quarterfinals and then got cheated by Middlesbrough.
That was disgusting, that as well.
Yeah, it wasn't. The butcher of Bootle, the referee, and was it Craig Hignett?
It was the most disgusting decision I've seen on a football pitch for, well, quite some time.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Look at that. Reading 0, Middlesbrough 1. Shocking bit of refereeing.
It was real bad.
Anyway, Fulham. Visiting, as mentioned on Tuesday, should the fog stay away. They're ninth in the Championship. They're only 6 points behind us, so they win this game. That gap is cut to 3. Their recent form has been okay, a bit like Reading, really. They've drawn 2, won 2, lost 1. But they've only lost twice away from home all season, Westy. They're a very tough team to beat. We saw that in the 45 minutes we did get before the fog came down. Really tough side.
Yep. Like I said, I think they know how to beat us as well, which is a slight concern. You just hope that Reading score an early goal and stop teams doing what QPR done. If you can score it baffles their game plans. And I think what's happened recently is we haven't scored early and then we're just passing it to each other at the back and it becomes a bit of a yawn-a-thon until they get a chance to put the ball in it.
Yeah, I mean, the bookies make curious odds of this. I'm still not 100% convinced this is right, but this is what odds checker told me this morning, was that Reading are 9-4 to win this, the draw is 5-2, and Fulham are 13-10, so Fulham are the favourites for this one.
That's good value there, all over, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
For a home win, for a team that's in fourth, that is good value.
Yeah, I'll have to double check that. Maybe it was one of those errant things you get on the price, not price comparison, the old peer-to-peer bookies. certainly, anyway, it looks like Fulham are coming to this one, certainly favourites, and you can understand why. They've got a fantastic record. You look at that team as well, they have got lots of threats in there. Chris Martin, Sonny Luko, Piers, in as much as I hate set as well, he's been in decent form. Tom Kearney, lots of threats, lots of different ways that they can hurt us.
Yeah, and you don't want Piers coming back and hurting us, do you? Especially when he had a good song as well. So unfortunately he went in.
Yeah, and Ola John as well. Yeah. Next, Ola John's getting no minutes, so no surprises there. Anyway, so Fulham visit on Tuesday and then Saturday. So much more, certainly on paper, winnable game, although we did say that against QPR.
Yeah.
Cardiff come here and they're in good form as well. They've won their last 3 games under Neil Warnock. They're unbeaten in 4. Those wins coming against Aston Villa, Bristol City and Burton Albion. As mentioned, the Neil Warnock factor is there. Look at their team, Westy, and they are 16th in the Championship, but there's a lot of seasoned Championship performers in that team.
Yeah, you wouldn't have expected them to be there, I don't think, at the start of the season. They have got some good players at this level, although they're sort of getting towards the wrong end of their careers, I think. That's probably where they're falling down a little bit.
Yeah, notice they've got Mr. Greg Halford on the bench. Peter Whittingham, who Jem Carrichan in our interview described as one of the toughest and most annoying players he's had to face.
It's Ed Morrison you've got to watch from corners. We know how good he is, isn't
he? Yeah, you're going to have your money on him?
Again, if I was backing him every week now for Cardiff, I think he gets the old goal, Donny Morrison, to be fair.
The thing is that you know what type of game this is going to be like as well with the Warnock side. They are going to sit back and they are going to look to put some strong tackles into Reading and nick a goal.
I think that if Derby, the stance that Derby took on Reading was to sort of liven the game up, make it a bit more scrappy I think Cardiff will be good at that anyway, and I think that won't be Warnock's tactics. He's done it here before. He'll try and unsettle them with a few kicks and
does it,
but push.
He won here last season with QPR when he was their caretaker manager for a bit. Obviously, we've seen what he did with Leeds.
And having a young side, sometimes that can work in your favour if you start trying to bully him a little bit.
Mm. Bookies, Reading are 23-20. The draw is 23-10. Cardiff are 12-5. Prediction league wise, not a lot of changes mentioned. All four of us, four out of five, predicted a win. Nobody got the score right. Handbags predicting the Reading nicking a win, so he's not gotten any points. That leaves Johnny Williams on top of the table on 24. He moves ahead of Handbags on 23. Westy, you're on 22 in second place. I'm on 20. Westy, you're not on 22nd. It's Charles Watts. Apologies. Charles Watts on 22. I'm on 20. Westy, sorry, you're bottom on 18.
I thought that was a massive turnaround out of nowhere. So, yeah, I agree with
you. Unfortunately, you're not riding that high.
No.
But I will let you go first.
Oh, great.
Just try and redeem yourself.
Okay, well, I'm going to go Reading 1, Fulham 1.
You're going to go, okay, 1-1. Yep.
And I'm going to do Reading 2, Cardiff 1.
Okay. I will say...
Would you take that win? Would you take
that win? I would absolutely take four points. I would absolutely take 4 points. I'm going to go on the optimistic train. I'm going to say a 1-0 win and a 3-1 win.
Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah, well, I very much hope so. Anyway, we'll get the thoughts of Johnny, Charles and Handbags before that game, for both of those games, and see how we get on and give an update in next week's show. That about wraps it up for us. We shall be back in just over a week's time. In terms of the podcast extra, we're still formulating some plans. We might have something to put out on the air this week, but not entirely sure yet. So don't want to announce anything just yet. What I can say is I interviewed DJ Mega Party the other week. It was a very interesting chat. You'll be able to hear that the next time we have a bit of a break. I think there's an international break in the not too distant future, so probably around then. And in the meantime, that is it for us. Again, thank you very much to those of you who contributed at patreon.com/thetylerstend, and those of you who submitted everything to the mailbag, and head over to thetylerstend.com for lots more opinion and analysis as well. And until next time, come on you Arse.
Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.